Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, the sun and fun capital of the world. It was a little cool here today, but it was sunny and beautiful. This is Dr. John Stamey, and welcome to ScaryCast. We have got a great show tonight. First of all, our co-host, the queen of ScaryCast, is with us, Robin McCray. How are you doing tonight, Robin?
I am doing great. Glad to be here with everybody.
Well, we're glad to have you here. It's great, and we couldn't do it without you. So thanks a lot for being here. And tonight we have the Surgeon General of ScaryCast, the one and only Dr. Trey Donaway, who gets the Most Valuable Player Award for the Georgia Bigfoot Conference in running the audio. Dr. Trey, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, it's great, John, and it's nice to not have to run the audio for anybody tonight. This is perfect.
Yeah, that's right. I get to do it. So yeah, well, that's good. Anyway, we're so glad to have you here, and hope everything's great over there in Camden, South Carolina. And from Houston, Texas, he was on with us last night. Last night we celebrated the 125th anniversary of the Aurora, Texas UFO crash. We were the first people in the nation to decide to make a celebration of that. And we were rewarded by the Wise County Messenger doing a podcast about it. And we had a lot of folks from Texas last night, which is great. But tonight from Houston, Texas, we've got Kyler Smith. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing amazing, man. I'm glad to be here. This is going to be an interesting show.
Well, it is going to be. It's always interesting because we have the one, the only. And truly one of my favorite guests of all time, because he's got such a cool topic, from the Flat Earth 2.0 group, which means we're one level up from 1.0, from Flat Earth 2.0, the one and only Mark Sargent. Mark, how are you doing tonight? And thank you for being here with us on ScaryCast.
I am doing well, and thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
We're glad to have you here. You've done a lot of great things. You've done documentaries. You've done conferences. You've done lots of great things. So, again, we're just glad to have you here. And I'm going to start off the questioning to say, what is going on with you and the Flat Earth Group? Because we're getting out of COVID. Like, I just had my first conference, which was this past weekend, the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, and it was very well attended. I mean, we had 342 people there, and that's a lot of people to come to a Bigfoot conference. It really is, in a town of 3,000 people, and it was just the most fun I could have ever had. And of course, I had Robin with me, I had Dr. Trey with me, we had Sonia Thompson from The Walking Dead, and also Kevin Holland from The Walking Dead. So we had a bunch of my really good friends there, and we had a good time. So what are you guys up to these days as we're easing out of the COVID restrictions?
Right. Well, the first thing we were doing was, was getting back into the conferences. So every year, actually, we did one let me rewind a bit. In 2019, we did conferences in I did them in seven different countries. We were all over the place. And then I was on my way to do a commercial in London for Pancake Day for McDonald's, and then the borders closed, and I was like, crap. So everything international just went out the window, so we were stuck with domestic. But our problem was we couldn't do, you know, being from the Truther community thing, we couldn't find a venue really anywhere that would do anything without masks. They all said, you know, for legal reasons, we really don't want to push it, so we have to have masks. And so we finally found one in out in your neck of the woods in Spartanburg. And that's what we did. So we did Flattoberfest. We called it Flattoberfest in Spartanburg in 2020, and I opened that one. And then I didn't go last year, but it looks like I will be going this year. I didn't. There was just too many iffy things travel-wise that were on the table last year. But yeah, so same venue. We're doing our thing in Spartanburg in the end of October this year, and hopefully we'll expand. The what?
Are you at the Spartanburg Memorial Auditorium?
Forgive me because I didn't organize the conference. I believe it's the Shriners Convention Center.
The Shrine Hall. I had looked into both of those for a Spartanburg Comic Con right before COVID hit. Yeah, the Shrine Hall and the Spartanburg Memorial Auditorium. Spartanburg Memorial Auditorium is where they've had so much great wrestling. It's kind of like the world capital of wrestling in South Carolina. You know, down here in South Carolina, we believe we can have a world capital. But it's a great location, and so is the Shrine Hall. And then, here came COVID, and it kind of stunk up everything. But that's great. I mean, I certainly. Are you the last weekend in October?
I believe so. I'd have to pull it up. I don't have it in front of me right this second because I wouldn't even be doing the promos for this until probably the end of May. But it should be a lot of fun. And again, I'm looking forward to it. It's been a long time coming. And for us, you know, in fact, I was focusing more on the whole pandemic, you know, the content I was making for the last 2 years. And it was just rough going for us, everybody, as you know. I mean, it was just tough to do anything. But we're still, I will say this, we've made a lot of online content. Since then, I mean, we've just been huge volumes of stuff is out there now.
Well, that's great, and I'm glad y'all are being. Yeah. You know what? I love people being successful. That's just a wonderful thing, and we're glad you are. So you've got your Spartanburg conference, and are you maybe looking at another conference or two in the United States?
Hopefully, the one in 2020, which we had to completely move down to Spartanburg, was supposed to be in Vegas. That was supposed to be our big blowout. You know, the first three that we did, the one that we did for the documentary was in Raleigh. Second one was in Denver. And then the 2019 one was in Dallas. And so, we're hoping. You know, we'll have to see how it goes. We're just kind of waking up out of everything right now, and hopefully, we'll see if we transition into any sort of interesting war in the next couple months. But I'm not going to hold my breath there.
All right. Well, that sounds good. All right. I've got a question for you.
Uh-huh.
How are things going between the flat earthers and the non-flat earthers? What's the scuttle between the two these days? Because I haven't really, I don't really know. And you're kind of our guy to tell us, you know, what's going on between the two, and what is one saying about the other, and the other saying about one.
Well, if you want a summary of it, I suggest you watch either on Sean Atwood's channel or on YouTube or Professor Dave's channel. There was a brutal debate between one of our guys, channel DITRH, otherwise known as David Weiss, otherwise known as Deep Inside the Rabbit Hole. He went up against a guy named Professor Dave, and we had never really done anything against this guy. We've got some dedicated troll channels out there, and this guy is way up there. I don't know how many subs he's bought, but way up there as far as troll goes. I mean, he is dedicated to just coming after us. And I have never – the debate was only an hour long, and it was on Sean Atwood's channel, but they were trying to moderate, but they weren't really doing much of a job there. I have never seen a non-flat earther use so many personal attacks in a one-hour span of time ever. I mean, he just constantly – like the three words that come to mind, idiot, moron, and stupid. I mean, like 2 minutes out of the gate, just hitting him. And if you guys know anything about debates, you know, going back to high school, it's the one thing you do not do. I mean, you will lose points for that. And he just never, ever stopped. I don't know if he was in panic mode. But, the people that are against us are still definitely against us. The other people, we grab a lot of numbers by attrition. But the hardcore people who've got a master's degree basically in anything or heavy science-based, they're not coming around. They hate us. How's that?
Okay. Well, that's certainly understandable because that gets into the realm of the skeptics, and I am really going to be coming after the skeptics this year. Skeptics basically lie. And they lie, number one. And number two, what they do is they attack the person. They don't attack the issue. They don't attack anything with facts. They just lie and they attack the person. One is a very famous one that I've got in my book, The Lizard Man Companion, which is about ready to come out. You know, someone wanted to say that the primary best the primary and best witness was he was out there at 2 o'clock in the morning because he was high or drunk. Well, no, he was out there at 2 o'clock in the morning because he got off late from McDonald's because he worked at the busiest McDonald's on Interstate 20. And sometimes they ask employees to help them stay and get ready for the morning shift. And, you know, that's the fact. In fact, I stopped at that McDonald's and I asked them that question. They said, yes, we are so busy. We let people, you know, our employees, we pay them overtime, we give them food, we do everything we can for them to help us. So, you know, there's reasons for things like that. And then you have historical societies that rely on 10 and 8-year-olds to tell a story when they weren't even viable witnesses. And that's just crazy. That's part of the Aurora UFO incident. And, you know, it's fake because an 8-year-old told a 10-year-old the following thing because her father didn't like the story. You know, just crazy stuff. I mean, if you're going to have an argument, I say you must have a real argument. You must delve into the facts. You can't just talk about, well, I don't like it because of this person or that person. It doesn't make any sense. Now, if you beat somebody on the merit of your argument, that's fine. And I think it's wonderful. But if you don't beat them on the merits of your argument, then frankly, shut up. And that's about what a lot of skeptics do. Then there's the amazing Randy who wrote that book, Flim Flam. He took 10 different incidences and talked about how they were all fake. And about half of his arguments were not good. They were not valid. And it was a best-selling book, and everybody thought it was great. But it's the amazing Randy, and all he does is he makes money being a magician. And all he does, again, is make money. That's the whole point of what he does. So he can write a book like that and get everybody all lathered up and excited, and he has no real arguments. He deals in speculation. So I'm one that if we're going to have, you know, I'm not going to say yes, flat earth, or no, flat earth. What I'm going to say is let's do arguments. Let's do logical arguments, and let's talk about the issues. Let's not talk about the people. Because, you know, people are just people. They've got their own beliefs, and don't yell at them because they have beliefs. I hope you agree with what I just said.
I do. I do. And by the way, is the amazing Randy, would that be, was it James Randy, the guy that went up against Uri Geller back in the day?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he went up against a fraud. I mean, Uri Geller was pretty much a fraud. But he wanted to make it such a big deal that Uri Geller was a fraud. I mean, we all knew he was, and, you know, he couldn't bend spoons. He tried, but he couldn't.
Well, the smart people, intelligent people knew that that Uri was a fraud. But, again, the number one rule of magic, which Uri broke, was he was printed off like he had supernatural powers. And that – but again, I'm not defending James Randi. I just remember the documentary about that because Johnny Carson got involved at some point.
Right.
And by the way, one more thing. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, please go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say the 1899 Aurora thing that you're talking about, is that the one where the well got poisoned and with radioactive material where they tried to bury everything?
Yes, it is. And we discussed that. In fact, last night we talked about several avenues of investigation that had not been done. John LeMay, who is our friend and he is with us once a month, on ScaryCast, he liked the ideas that we had, and I'm going to be re-listening to that program and kind of building a document of what we need to do because I'm going to go out there to Houston, and Kyler and I, who's on the show tonight, Kyler and I are going to go out to Marfa. We're going to meet with John LeMay, Then we're all going to go up to Aurora, and we've got the gentleman from the Wise County Messenger who are going to take us around to some places and introduce us to some folks who have not yet really been interviewed. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to gather some data and find out a lot more about the Aurora crash that might not be public, and we're going to put it out in the third edition of Look Up in the Sky, my book, Aliens, UFOs, Bigfoot, and Anomalies. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to really, really go out there and do some investigative reporting, which, again, is great. And we got John LeMay, who is a certified expert in a lot of this stuff. He's done a great job. And we're just glad he's part of our team. I mean, we can't thank him enough. So that's what we're going to do this summer. And Kyler, are you ready?
Absolutely. I've been waiting for this for a while. We've been talking about it, so I'm excited.
Yeah, that's good. We're looking at end of May or probably June. We've got to get over Memorial Day and everything, but we're going to do that, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So I want to turn things over to our panel. We're going to first of all go with the Queen of Scarycast, and then we're going to go with the Surgeon General of Scarycast. You know, it's great to have a queen and Surgeon General. It's almost like we're a nation, you know. The nation is Scarycast. And then we're going to have Kyler, who's down there in oil-rich Texas, and then we'll keep going around, and I might have a few comments. So, Robin, what comments or questions do you have for the great Mark Sargent?
Well, when it comes to, you know, opposing sides, Mark, what do you feel like, is there a certain group or a certain area of people that you find are more opposed to this thought of the earth being flat than any other?
Oh yeah. Demographically. And it's not age based. Well, age has a little bit to do with it. But it's not politically based or anything like that. It's mostly education. It's something I've talked about for years, which is if you have a bachelor's in something, you might be okay. You might be open to certain things. If you've got a bachelor's degree, though, or higher in a physical science, it's going to get trickier. And then if you have a master's or higher, it's almost impossible. I've spoken with, in fact, some of my friends who are PhDs, you know, I've said, you know, so why can't we get anyone to, you know, from your side of the fence to talk about it? And they come and they say, what, are you kidding? It's like by the time you leave your master's and you're working on your PhD, you've spent so much time and money on your education that you don't want to risk any of that. You know, one of the scariest words for anyone who's already, you know, finished their thesis is ostracized. You know, all you care about is being published and your peer groups. That's all you care about. And so you don't, the problem they have is it's mostly conditioning, believe it or not, which is, you know, when it's fine. You know, if you have a globe in your classroom from kindergarten till high school, that's one thing. I mean, that's a lot of conditioning, but it's very subtle. When you start doing graduate and postgraduate work, it's just you're basically curing your brain. You know, there's so much conditioning there that you couldn't risk it, because if you did, your figurative world would start crumbling around you. And I've told people, like, look, you know, like running into people with their master's degree, and it's like, look, don't even bother talking to them, because even if you could convince them, they're just going to end up crying in a corner in a fetal position, holding on to some bottle of alcohol. It's not going to end well for them. So sorry, long answer short, probably education would be the biggest thing, which actually helps us, because as you guys know, you know, when you're in high school, and in university, you know, the chess club and the math club and the physics club, they're pretty small compared to other groups, like, I don't know, the band, stuff like that. So I tell people, like, look, you know, we don't have to worry about the heavy science-based groups, because they're small compared to the masses. Remember, there's only one valedictorian and one salutatorian and whoever else. So there you go.
Well, what would be, if there was one point that, as far as in your mind, or that you would want to see other people think about,
yeah,
that would support your theory of the flat earth, what would that one single point be?
Okay. Normally I have like a 5-point thing that I send people in a sheet, but I'm not going to do 5 points for you. The most common one that other people throw at heavy science-based people is long-distance photography, which is if the curvature of the Earth is supposedly 8 inches per mile squared, which means 8 inches per mile per mile, that can only go so far with those guys, because eventually they're going to say, well, it's refraction or it's some weird reverse atmospheric lensing or something like that. But I've seen that argument go down many, many times, and science just holds firm. The one I usually throw at them is gravity versus the vacuum of space. So what I do, I'll give it to you guys really quick. So imagine if you have whatever the second floor is above you, the ceiling above you, imagine you turn that into a small vacuum chamber, and you had a valve, and a big handle, and you yanked on that thing and popped the seal. What would happen? Well, it's not like the movies, right? Sci-fi movies, they do a lot for plot. It's not like you're going to hear a hissing sound. It's like, oh, no, I've only got 2 minutes of air left. Get the duct tape. No, it's not like that. It's instant. It's very, very violent. It's, pressure equalizing very, very, very quickly, which is why the end of Aliens with Sigourney Weaver, with the vacuum of space behind her, she's climbing up that ladder. I just howl at that now. The air will equalize. The air will just rip upstairs, and hopefully you won't get sucked up with it. You may black out. Hopefully nothing horrible will happen to you. So the follow-up question to that is, when you walk outside, why is the atmosphere still here? Why are you still breathing? Because remember, our atmosphere borders the vacuum of space. And the law of thermodynamics in that case is pressure cannot exist next to a vacuum without some sort of barrier. It's like, well, what's the barrier? And your knee-jerk response, the only response you have, and any scientist has, is, well, it's got to be gravity. Of course, right? And I say, you mean the same gravity that couldn't keep the air from rushing upstairs into that room earlier? That exact same gravity? And then they just kind of gloss over. They don't know what to do with it. And so then my final question to that is, all right, tell me what happens at the edge of space. Tell me what happens when our atmosphere ends, the bleeding edge of space, quote unquote, what happens there? What happens when our atmosphere meets the vacuum of space? Tell me what happens. No, and not only that, tell me where that happens. No one does. It's just one of those things that gets the gears grinding. And then if they're still staring at me weird, I go, I'll follow it up with something trendy. I'll say, well, doesn't the whole term greenhouse gases mean a little bit more if it's an actual greenhouse with a ceiling on it? Because their argument usually is, I don't want to drag this out too much, their argument is, well, it has to be gravity, because if gravity wasn't holding the atmosphere on, we'd die. And I go, well, you can't really come at it from that angle. I mean, you're saying that has to be it. The only, we're alive because of gravity. Can't be anything else at all. Like, I don't know, we're living in a building, a snow globe. Can't be that. Well, no. How do you know? Well, and then they go down a whole different path. So there you go. That's my point. Gravity versus vacuum of space.
Okay. Robin, did you get your answer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, great. Well, thanks. Dr. Trey Donaway, can't wait to hear your question.
I really don't have any specific question. It's always interesting to hear from the Flat Earth Society. And
it's not the Flat Earth Society, just so you know. Well, we're not part of the actual Flat Earth Society. We are the
Flat Earth 2.0.
Flat Earth 2.0, or social media Flat Earth, or whatever. We don't care about those guys. Those guys have never made a video ever. They just, the old books, but we're not them.
Okay. Well, I really don't have any questions. I've got a doctorate in science, and it's just an interesting series of arguments you have, Mark. That's all I can tell you. It's fascinating.
He's holding back. In his mind, he thinks that Mark is certifiably insane. And I don't blame you. And by the way, I'm not picking on you just because you have a doctorate. Let me tell you this really fast. When I gave that question and four other questions to a doctorate who is a doctorate in physics out in Georgetown, he folded, but not because I was smarter or anything like that. It's because when you have a doctorate in physics, whatever he specialized in, who knows when it comes to physics, you are so narrow banded in terms of, you know a lot about a very, very, narrow chunk of things. And he wasn't comfortable in addressing stuff that was outside of that. So it wasn't a question of wits, a battle of intelligence. It was strictly because, being a doctorate, there's certain things, it's like, well, I don't think I'm qualified to really talk about that, so I'm not going to. It's like, all right, I get it.
Well, I do have a question. Does space exist?
Gotcha. What is it?
Does space exist? Space.
Okay. Does space exist? I would follow that up with, does it have to? Meaning, if we are living in a building, a giant Hollywood backlot studio with walls and a floor and a ceiling, and space was simulated, and you sound like you might be old enough to have gone to a planetarium once or twice in your life, I can't tell, wouldn't that be enough? Meaning, if people go to a planetarium, and they say, well, there's Jupiter up there inside the planetarium. It's like, yep, looks spherical. Can you land on it? Nope. Why not? Just a light on a ceiling. If you had the engineering capability, not us, of course, whoever built this place, ancient civilization, older, powerful group, who knows? If you had the ability to create a planetarium that was thousands of miles wide and high and create the illusion of space, why would you need space at all? And
it wouldn't exist then. So you're spot on.
Yeah. Why use it? In fact, I've even come at the religious side of things because they say, well, are you calling God lazy for not building space? And it's like, no, I'm going to steal a line from Carl Sagan there where Sagan said, well, space doesn't make a lot of sense in some ways because it seems like an awful waste. There's huge tracts of nothingness. And so whoever built this place would be very, very efficient. Steal the line from Contact. Whoever built this is going to be functioning on multiple levels of efficiency. And if 99.999% of the population believe the illusion, that's all you need. Again, last thing. I know we're limited on time. But imagine taking a pure, Amish person that's never even seen technology, or even someone from a couple hundred years ago, and bring them into a planetarium today. It'd blow their minds. They'd absolutely freak out. It's like the moon. Holy smokes, how this happened? What am I looking at? They wouldn't even be able to fathom it. Well, that's just what we've done, really, over the last 100 years. Compare that to, what could we do in 1,000 years or an advanced civilization do with even more time? It's just beyond our engineering capability right now. But, one last thing. The Truman Show, the movie, which was a 20-mile-wide dome and it cost billions of dollars to build, we could do that if we wanted to and fool someone like Truman. Absolutely, we could pull that off. Anything bigger than that wouldn't be cost-effective. Anyway, sorry, there you go. I ramble.
Okay, so space exploration, as we have had it documented since the first atmospheric passage of things that
sure.
supposedly have gone to space, that right. is fiction?
Unfortunately, yeah. But not
okay.
because...
Okay, all right, that's okay.
Not because of anything sinister, just because you kind of have to. If we find out, for example, what I'm saying here is that even our best and brightest didn't figure out what this world was until about 1960, which doesn't really go too far past the whole birth of space exploration. If we don't find out what this place really is until 1960, do you tell the public? Nah, probably not. Everything's already been built. Everything's been established. You don't want to risk it. People in power don't roll those sort of dice. And
why wouldn't you tell the public?
Oh, a great question. It's not what you stand to gain. Let's say we'll call them the world order. I'm not going to pick on any particular groups because there's so many different groups I can name off, and nobody knows who's really in charge. Only just know it's not usually the people in public. It's the secret. The first rule of power has never changed, which is stay hidden. Or to use the Napoleon quote, you can't be overthrown if they don't know who you are. So think about this. Let's say in 1960 you figure this thing out. You figure out it's like, oh, crap, we're in some sort of building. And you sit down with a big group of people, the ones in control, and say, all right, what's the worst that could happen? And then somebody raises their hand, and they say, well, three things. One, academically, you know, you would have to tear down libraries and rebuild them because astrophysics and astronomy, those have to be gutted, and who knows when those would be rebuilt. And then the remaining physical sciences, I don't know, astronomy, biology, geology, hydrology, anything with an ology, they would have to be rebuilt as well. It would take a long, long time. And that's every university in every country. It's a nightmare. That's just academic. Economically, you'd have to, I don't know, pause world markets for months because, we're so wired in with these. It's so interactive now that they're twitchy on just about anything. So you tell them, oh, yeah, by the way, you're living in a snow globe. Who knows what the world markets would do? Everyone would panic. But the last one would be the religious angle. Think about it. You're going to give the five major religious houses of this world, Hinduism, Buddhism, Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, and all the variants, but the big five, you would give them leverage against science simultaneously. And you'd say, oh, yeah, by the way, show restraint, even though science has been beating you over the head with textbooks for the last 500 years. Between those three things, that's a very short meeting. But, you know, all of a sudden there's this silence at the end, and someone at the end of the table goes, okay, so we're going to keep a lid on this for a while until we can figure out how to disseminate it to the public in a way which we can use it to our advantage. Because I didn't – trust me when I say this, I don't blame them. In 1960, no way would I tell the public. I mean, you saw what happened with Roswell. And that was just Roswell back in, what, was it 47 when Roswell happened?
48.
I mean,
1948.
The what? 48.
In 1948.
Now, what happened in Roswell related to this?
Oh, well, think about this. If there was, when the Roswell crash happened, and this was pre-TV, but there was some radio and papers, when the military base happened to just release this to the press domestically, you know, just locally, it spread everywhere to where the newspapers, you know, even the Pentagon was playing catch up, and people were freaking out, and so they had to backtrack as fast as they could, and that was just a stupid little, you know.
But what are they backtracking? What event happened that would have been earth shattering?
Wait, you know about Roswell, right? So I'm not trying to
Roswell, New Mexico.
Yeah, the Roswell, New Mexico crash. So
what happened?
If the ship that crashed in the farmer's field and everyone thought it, you know, people were blaming each other, and then the military came in.
Where did the ship come from?
We don't know.
I was just going to say that, Trey.
So we don't know where the ship happened, but it didn't change life on Earth. And,
well,
you know,
no,
I understand it would certainly change people's paradigm of the way the universe and the Earth is constructed from what they believed in, but it wouldn't change day-to-day life that we're living under an engineered dome, would it?
I mean,
the world would continue to just move along in ignorance that most people believe that there is space and...
Are we talking about the dome here, or are we talking about the Roswell thing?
Well, the Roswell and the dome.
Okay.
I mean, are now accepting that Roswell was a craft of some sort, I guess the question would be, where did it come from? Did it come from terrestrial, or did it come from the other side of the dome? And what is on the other side of the dome, I wonder?
And That's a great point, by the way, which was, because the follow-up question to that would be, do I believe in aliens? Yes.
No, that's not a follow-up question right now. For me, it's what's on the other side of the dome?
And how could
we learn what's on the other side of the dome? And do they know what's on the other side of the dome, and they're keeping it quiet for whatever reason?
Those are wonderful questions, by the way. So what's on the other side of the dome?
And, you know, in a world where it is, do you agree that we have missiles, intercontinental ballistic missiles that can go from one point to another point further than the atmosphere that we believe to be the top of the atmosphere? So certainly we could launch something up as high as the dome would be, because from our measurements of where we think space goes, it's not really that far above
the
Earth's surface.
And by the way, what you're just rattling off right there, that is exactly what they did. And this is amazing because you obviously haven't watched any of the vids I've made, which is from in 1958, that's exactly what they did, which is what scientists and men of power would do. The first thing you do, if you run into some sort of barrier, if you see there's a barrier out there, or you even perceive there's a barrier out there, first thing, it's like, get the cannon. Let's see what we can bust through this thing. And that's exactly what they did. From 1958 until 1962, the United States and the Soviets, all the atomic testing was straight up. Every missile, every shot that was fired for 4 years was basically straight up. The first shots were low megaton. This is back when megaton was kind of a pricey deal. And then everything after that was medium kiloton. And when I say medium, anywhere from 80 to 300 kiloton, which is still way, way bigger than the Japan stuff. And that's all they were doing. So the best I could tell was, if you can't bust through something with a megaton device, you're not getting through it. And so at that point, they were just painting the sky. They were just using weapons as paintballs, basically, just hitting, firing them off in different angles and trying to map out what they could, because they didn't have any vehicles that could go that high in anything manned. And then after that, they're like, okay. And by the way, after those first, I think it was the first three shots in 1958, rolling over into 1959, that's when they created NASA. And simultaneously, by the way, also locking down the outer edge, which would have been Antarctica, with the Antarctic Treaty, which says that no country can ever own any part of Antarctica ever, and no corporation can ever go down there ever. The only unbroken treaty in the history of treaties. So yes, what you were just saying there is exactly the thought process they had.
Yep. When you get done with this, because I'm going to rattle a little bit like Trey did, and I'm not a scientist. I don't have a degree that qualifies me for any of this. I'm putting that out there right now.
That's all right.
I'm just me. I'm a layman. However, I deal with all the paranormal things out there, whether I want to or not.
Robin, stop. You're the queen of scary cast, so that gives you the right to do this.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So now we're going to talk about space.
Yep.
And I'm sure that you and many other people have all the scientific information as to why we may or may not have that. I'm not discrediting that at all.
Okay.
What I deal with, what I work with, the things that I have had to interact with, there has to be space, okay?
Because of horoscopes and astrology?
Oh, heavens no. I don't
okay.
put my faith in that, because I think with horoscopes and astrology, there's too much wiggle room.
Right.
I don't feel like there's accuracy in that. I think it comes down to interpretation and a lot of other things. What I deal with is a little bit different. I deal with the UFOs. I deal with the ETs. I was abducted when I was very young. It's happened my entire life. I work with contactees that were abducted.
Okay.
I'm very well aware of not every single faction of ET that's out there. I know there are some that go through inner Earth. I know there's some that are up there. John and I worked on a remote viewing project of the moon and what was inside the moon. Now, so unless the moon is inside the dome and all these planets that these things, such as the Evens, I'm Serpo, unless these planets are they supposed to be inside the dome as well? I'm just trying to get some clarification because I'm a little confused on this one.
No, it's all right. So in this model, imagine a snow globe. I'm just saying that it's easy visual. But you can imagine whatever you want. As long as it's got walls and a floor and a ceiling, I don't really care. The moon and the sun, yes, would be inside it, roughly.
What about the wormholes? What about all the other planets that are out in the galactics? Because...
Wait a minute. I remember you from last time.
I wasn't on with you last time.
Yeah.
Were you on in 2018? The first time we did this?
I didn't even know John in 2018.
All right. Okay. So in everything, with the exception of the sun and the moon, would be no different than a planetarium, just lights on a ceiling. All it has to be.
Yeah.
But there's
I have a harder time
there's
with
a little.
Than I do the flat Earth theory because I just like I said, this is like I and again I'm not a scientist. I'm not even going to claim to be. I just know what I work with and what I've worked with since I was very young and what I've been taught by them. So, like, and anybody that knows me knows, you know, I have a very bizarre life. I'm not even going to lie. I deal with cryptids. I deal with ETs. I deal with dimensionals. I deal with elementals. I deal with all of it. Not because I tried to deal with it. They found me. I didn't go looking for them. And I am completely open to all kinds of different ideas on everything because I think that we've been lied to from the get-go by the government. I don't believe that the reality that they've got programmed into our brain even exists. So, and John will contest to the fact that I am a person that keeps a very open mind on everything, and I think all things are possible.
Absolutely,
so
you do, Robin.
Yeah, so I'm not completely opposed to the things that you're saying. And I don't necessarily have to think that it makes sense to me, but I need to find some common bridge. And
the,
like
how about
I said,
this? How about
you know.
This? How about this? The ships are real. I can tell you that right now. As far as anything's flying around there.
I have photographs, and I've had them land in my yard. I know they're real.
All right.
I've been on them.
Wonderful. I do not doubt that. One wouldn't question it for a second. I was told years ago, way before I got into this, it's like, you know what, you want to have some fun, grab some night vision binoculars and start watching the skies. And the guy was absolutely right. The skies are just crawling with stuff all the time, and most of them, it isn't us. You know, I'd love to say that the American government could take credit for it because that's one of the things we do, but that is not the case.
No.
You're absolutely right.
No.
Well, the only difference that I have, and again, I'm not trying to shoot down your stuff, and whoever.
No,
whoever
and I'm not asking you to defend it, shoot it down, or anything. I'm just trying to make sense out of it in my own mind.
I'm saying that whoever's flying around up there with all these things are not. They don't have to be from Mars and Jupiter or Venus or deep space or anything like that. I have always considered them to just be older version of civilization. Everybody knows, and we're not talking about the people. I mean, yes, I did own multiple DVDs of Ancient Aliens, but you know, we're not the first people to rent this apartment by any stretch. You know,
oh, no.
The sunken city.
They were here before us anyway.
Oh yeah, there's stuff. There's remnants of things out there. Not a lot, and of course they're not deliberately intact. But I mean, heck, Puma Punku, sunken cities off of India, sunken cities off of Japan, the Bosnian pyramids, the real pyramids, Bimini Road, so on and so on. There's all sorts of fun stuff out there. But as far as if whoever you're talking to, if they're telling you they're from deep space, maybe they mean interdimensionally? I don't know. I mean, do I believe in multiple dimensions? Sure. Do I believe there could be other snow globes outside of this one? You bet. Absolutely. What I'm saying is you don't have to have space because, you know, if you make space an illusion, then you can just pack everything in. I mean, we could be in a freaking egg carton full of these things. Now, can different species or different crafts, that's one of the big questions is. The things that are flying around, are they trapped inside here with us, or can they move freely? I don't know what the rules are. I don't know what the protocols are. It's possible. I mean, one of the things that really sent shivers up my spine years ago, and you guys probably know about it, was the 1561 Nuremberg event, where, you know, two giant armadas are fighting over the city in Germany and for a solid hour, and the third faction comes in to break it up, and they all leave. That raised a huge amount of questions for me as far as what protocols go, because I do think there's a prime – well, obviously, there's some sort of prime directive out there where whoever it is not allowed to just show up in the middle of Indiana and start taking selfies and sign a few autographs and leave because there's too many ramifications. But I don't think we're that different in terms of what you're experiencing and what I'm throwing out there. I don't think we're that far apart.
No, like I said, I'm curious because like I said, number one, I don't go by what the government says because they've lied to us about everything under the sun. Like I have a lot of respect for our military. Our government is about zero. You know, they hide more than they're ever going to tell us for a multitude of reasons. That's not going to change anytime in the near future. But like I said, I deal with a lot of things that really defy science, defies logic, that most people can't even comprehend. So I get the whole point of trying to get people to believe something that they just don't want to believe. I get that.
Right.
100% get it. I deal with that on a daily basis.
Yeah.
But when I'm looking at the part about the space, that was when I'm kind of like, I'm not saying you're wrong. I don't ever tell people they're wrong because I could be wrong. I don't believe anybody's right 100% of the time. I don't believe anybody's an expert, and I don't believe anybody's, you know, infallible of getting something wrong, because I think perfection is an illusion, and I don't believe that anybody's perfect and they get it right all the time. It doesn't matter who it is. But like I said, in my line of, I don't even want, people say it's research, it's my life, whether I wanted it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of those things. Now, you've got UFOs that come from underground. You've got UFOs that come out of the water. You have them come up in the sky. Now, if we have this dome and they're all interlocked in this and they can't leave the dome, that's where I get a little fuzzy on that. I'm not, whether or not space is there or not, is not so much the question as, if they were locked down in this dome. Like, I mean, I don't even, wouldn't even begin to estimate how high this dome goes. But then you look, and this is, I know this sounds kind of funny, and I don't know a whole lot about this part because I really honestly just don't pay attention to it. Like Elon Musk now has that ship that they're taking everybody up in, that William Shatner went up in it.
Yeah.
Elon
wasn't Shatner's. I think that was the Google.
That was Blue something Bezos, or other,
Jeff
wasn't
Bezos.
It?
Bezos.
Bezos. Okay. So are they, when they go up and they do that, are they considered still in that dome as well?
Sure. Sure. I mean,
Robin, I've got an answer to one of your questions about how high is the dome. In the 1956 Encyclopedia Britannica, in the article about Antarctica, and I've got a copy of it right here. I've got a copy of it, and it says,
I'm curious because I'm trying to put all this together.
It says that the dome is 31,000 feet high. Now,
well, that would be maybe at the Antarctic edge, maybe, but it would slope
up.
It would go up pretty high.
This is what the article said. It's an unbelievable article. It's in Encyclopedia Britannica, and then it vanished in 1960 after the International Geophysical Year, and nobody can explain this article. The people that edited it, they're dead now. And this is just one of the craziest things in the world, is it basically discusses the flat Earth. And
hey, John.
It's like, yes. Oh, hey, Mark, how you doing?
Good. Glad to join you guys. I know it's a little late, but better late than never. Really interesting conversation I'm hearing so far.
It got put in the Britannica. I want to know how in the world they were measuring it.
I'm just telling you the facts that I've got. It's one of the most amazing articles, and it's like it's an incredible article. I'm gonna send a copy of it out to everybody. And
John. Here's the thing. If the truth was published in 1956. And the world didn't come to a screeching halt, then the truth was revealed. What happened to all the repercussions that would happen when we all found out we were living inside this dome? And another question, not really a question, but a comment. Robin, when you have conversations, when you have communications with your multitude of friends, maybe when they're talking about a star or space or something, maybe they just mean there's a special place inside the dome they live in, but it's just we've been misinterpreting what they've been saying. forever because we assumed it was space because we believed there was a space, but these people, it's just not space. So maybe it's just a translation error, because otherwise there would be cognitive dissonance between what we perceive as space and what the folks that you communicate with would think.
Because we've been misled our whole life. Like, we've been programmed to believe certain things.
Yeah.
I have a question. I just jumped on. Hey, I'm Mark. Sorry, I'm a little late here. So I'm really interested in Flat Earth and all the theories that revolved with that. There's just some things that come to mind automatically whenever this comes up, because I've had friends who believed in it and just conversations about it. So one thing that just comes to mind, it's a dimensional theory. It's the whole premise of Flat Earth is based off dimension, right? A flat plane, you know, that's like a disc as opposed to a sphere, like different surface areas and that type of thing. So from what I've heard, like the south hemisphere is farther away from the center than the northern hemisphere. Northern hemisphere is in the middle. Southern hemisphere is farther out, correct? Like the Antarctica is...
It would be basically the UN flag.
Okay, so in that case, though, the circumference of circumnavigating the southern hemisphere would be a lot larger circumference than the northern hemisphere, except when I've taken 3 points in the northern hemisphere and 3 points in the southern, for example, New York, going to Rome, going to Hong Kong, going back to New York, and I take Sydney, Australia to, Chile to South Africa, back to... So that circumference would be a lot larger because it would be closer to the edge of the disk. But yet both of them are approximately 45 travel distance time with a plane. So, like, you would expect at least, like, 10 times the distance in the southern hemisphere circumnavigating than the northern. And, like, I don't know if you've traveled much intercontinentally. Like, I've been to, like, Asia. I've been to... Europe, I've traveled across Canada on a plane and things like that. Takes a long time. So if you're talking about going way around that distance on a disc, that would take a long time, but yet it coincides. That's one thing. Second thing is the Coriolis effect, which I'm sure you know about. Like, so there's places like you go to Uganda on the equator, you go to the northern hemisphere like 20 yards, and the water spins one way. You go to the south of the equator, 20 yards, it spins the other way. You go right on the equator, there's no spin, it just goes through the middle.
Right.
And that same effect happens with weather systems, not just on Earth, like they spin clockwise and counterclockwise, depending on what hemisphere you're at. But that's also witnessed on places like Jupiter, right? When you look, which is a sphere, like we could see it through a telescope. So just those two basic things that come to mind, primarily the one that has to do with dimension, because it is kind of a dimensional theory. And I believe that we do live in a multidimensional universe. So I believe that there's more than meets the eye outside of perception. But what's just your general thoughts or reflections based on what I just said, especially the one like about circumnavigating the southern hemisphere?
Okay. First off, when it comes to circumnavigating the southern hemisphere, let's look at flight paths. And I know you probably, just gathering what you said there, you probably haven't watched the clues. But I did a couple clues that talked about, and I wasn't the one that came up with this, it was a guy out in England that had the initial idea, but I really ran with it, which was flight paths in the northern hemisphere, absolutely fine. You know, anything, you know, if we're talking about dinner plate, we'll call it the inner circle and the outer circle. Inner circle flight paths are no problem whatsoever. But when you get into the outer circle, anything from South America to Southern Africa to Australia to New Zealand, the flight routes are absolutely off the charts weird. Because you can barely find, and I know there are some people say, well, no, you can find some nonstops. 90%, in fact, it's more than 90% of those southern hemisphere flights are absolutely double connection. You can't find nonstop flights, even from capital cities. It doesn't matter how much money you pay. Not only that, though, here's the part that throws me, because someone will say, oh, okay, I can find one from Auckland, New Zealand to Santiago, Chile, right? There's one or two out there. I go, really? Prove the route. Meaning, when a plane gets offshore, like even, I don't know, 150, 200 miles, if it's not within another island, another ground-based radar system, it'll blink off of GPS. And I knew this because I watched it for days and days and days. meaning the latitude and longitude coordinates will go into estimated or approximated mode, which means they have they kind of know where the plane is, but not really. And it'll blink out, and it will not show back up on the GPS system until it gets within 150, 200 miles of whatever location, then it makes course corrections. And we see that over and over and over again. So anyone that says, can you make those nonstop flights potentially? Sure. Tell me the route that no one's ever sent it to me, 7 years.
Well, I'm sure Qantas does it between New Zealand, Australia, to other parts of the Southern Hemisphere. But the one thing that was my main point here is the flight times circumnavigating the South and the North coincide. They're both 45 hours. If it was like it would make a triangle on a flat Earth model, because there'd be a triangle between three points on the Northern Hemisphere that would make a small triangle, and there'd be three points on the Southern Hemisphere that would make a much larger triangle.
And it always turns into a shallow dogleg. I mean, no, don't get me wrong here. We have done a lot of work on flight paths, especially emergency landing flight paths, where the plane should be, you know, like someone gets pregnant on board, not gets pregnant. They're going to deliver on board. Although I'm sure some people do get pregnant on board. And they're heading a certain way. It's like, okay, we think they're going to divert one way, but no, they divert into a flat Earth map way. You know what I mean? But when it comes, again, when it comes to the times when you're talking about, it's like, fine, it'll take, you say you can get from this point to this point at a certain time. I will keep throwing back at you. It's like, show me the route. Show me the latitude and longitude coordinates of that plane. And by the way,
even if it takes the shortest distance between two points, it would still be way
it
larger.
It never takes the shorter distance between two points. It never crosses the Southern Atlantic, the Southern Pacific, or the Indian Ocean. Very rarely. In fact, what kills me is, remember, what I'm saying is that the GPS system, which is supposedly 32 overlapping satellites, with overlapping blanket coverage, has huge gaps. Not just gaps, by the way, in the outer ring, but the inner ring too. It'll blink off if you're flying from when you leave the United States from the West Coast and you're heading to Hawaii, because there are no islands between like California and Hawaii. It'll blink off then. It's the old Loran system with a new sticker on it. That's all it is. And it's a wonderful con job, but for the most part it works because no one really cares. I've talked to a travel agent down who does corporate travel stuff in the southern, the outer ring, right? And she says, you'd be amazed how frustrated it is to get things booked because the travel times are so ridiculously long. Double connection and triple connection are ridiculous. Hey, I know we don't have that much time, but I want to address your Coriolis thing really quick. Okay, so the Coriolis effect, for anyone that's listening, is the spin of the Earth. So the spin of the Earth is spinning 1,000 miles an hour at the equator. It's spinning at basically 0 miles an hour at the north and south poles. Agreed? Yeah. And roughly in between, it could be spinning like where I am up in Seattle. It could be spinning 600 miles an hour. First question that I throw at anyone that says, the Coriolis effect. Okay, kind of like Saturn's rings, right? So if you believe in the Coriolis effect, why isn't there this massive wall of water at the equator, massive bulge of water at the equator, and the north and south poles aren't huge bald spots? Because gravity affects, the Coriolis effect affects liquid a lot. If you're on a merry-go-round and you're trying to hold on at the edge, the weather's perfect in the center. You're just turning in a circle. Anyone knows you're holding liquid in a car, you make a sharp left turn, that liquid's going somewhere.
The difference is we're in a pressurized system with multi-layers of density in atmospheric density and pressure levels, which is kind of like, if you had a pressurized like vacuum, like in a container, and you were to throw it around a room, it will still stay, things in that vacuum will stay in the same spot because it's a closed system. And that's essentially what we're in because of different pressure density levels of the atmosphere.
You came in kind of late when we were, did you miss the first part when I was talking about the vacuum of space?
I just jumped in like 10 minutes ago.
No, that's perfect. That's perfect. What you just said there ties right into it because I would immediately come back at you and say, fine, the pressurized system, how exactly is it being pressurized? How exactly is it being pressurized? You're going to say gravity.
Through density. It's through density, atmospheric density, because like
I know what the textbooks say, but again, if you have a vacuum chamber above you and you pull the valve on it, what happens to the air? It goes upstairs immediately, not slow, very very quickly. In a fraction of a second, it equalizes. So when you go outside of your house, why is our atmosphere still here?
Well, first of all, I want to say, like, it's really interesting, and I think that, like, outside of perception, like, there's a lot more going on here, and whether we're part of some simulation, you know what I mean? Like, there's some aliens,
well,
like, we're on some
simulation,
alien.
Then all bets are off anyway. And by the way, I'm a big simulation guy. Between the double slit experiment and a neuroscience versus free will experiments, oh, absolutely. Absolutely, I think, in simulation. In simulation, you can break all the laws of physics that you want.
Right.
But yeah, no, I hear you. No, those are good arguments. I've heard them before.
And,
but
and the with the Coriolis effect, it's something that we can witness on planets like Jupiter, right? Which we can see is a planet in the sky. We see the rotation of it. We see it's a sphere, right?
And that effect. But it's not in the sky because we got a dome over us. So that's where your theory completely falls apart, because there's this dome and there is nothing on the other side of the dome.
Let me throw it out.
I'm sorry.
He missed parts of this. If you go to a planetarium,
okay.
And I don't know if you're old enough to have gone to a planet. If you go to a planetarium, you see Jupiter on the ceiling. Does it look spherical? Yes, it does. Can you even see the moons? Yeah, maybe. Can you take a pair of binoculars and make it look even closer? Yes. Can you land on that Jupiter? No, you cannot. Why? Because it's just a light on a ceiling in a planetarium. Who's to say that the planetarium isn't just much, much bigger?
Okay, so I've been waiting to say this. I've been holding my tongue for a little bit.
All right, Paul, what you got?
I'm holding on to I'm staying on the third side of the coin here. I'm watching both sides. And honestly, I think both sides have a huge chunk of information missing that we may never actually know. I mean, we could both be right. Who knows? Which would be insane, because then there's so much more to this. So, yeah, I'm kind of looking at both sides like, holy crap. I mean, if both of us were just right on the dot, then – and plus the whole thing with the – what we were talking about just now, you said something about the simulation. I mean
– Yeah, simulation.
There's so many different places you could pull this. And I just feel like there's a lot of information missing that we don't know.
Let me throw one more out as far as the simulation goes through, and I'm not going to go into the Matrix or the 13th floor or anything like that. But don't forget that, because I came from the world of video games. You know, I used to produce video games for a living, and we've been striving to create the ultimate simulation. Every game that we make now in 2022, you know, every new version of Fortnite and GTA and all that stuff is built on a flat plane, meaning we don't build curves into the simulation because no one's going to notice, so why do it? And it's way easier to program. And as far as the sky is concerned, it's not even a dome. It's a box, because engineering hates curves. In fact, computers have a really, really difficult time trying to build their own circles. They can't build circles. They have to build it in really, really tiny squares, which is why pixels are squares. So... yes, everything that we have learned in the X number of years we've been building, you know, the computer technology has been out there, has been screaming that we are in some sort of simulation. Anyone that wants to look up stuff after this broadcast is over, look up the double slit experiment and all the facets of it. It's absolutely fascinating. But while you're at it, look up neuroscience versus free will, which goes into the whole thing that predestination, that we might not even be living in a simulation. We may be living in a virtual movie that we've already planned, that was planned out ahead of time, but that goes into a whole other thing we could spend an evening on.
Okay, I have another thing to
say,
sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Okay, I have another thing that's not to prove or disprove you, but I just want to hear your point of view on this, which is if you take two atomic clocks and then you like have one on one plane that goes around the world and one that's stationary, and then you bring those atomic clocks back after a period of time, there's a difference. Yep. And same with different altitudes. Right. How does flat Earth or your theory of just our general existence and environment fit in with that, where there seems to be some time dilation that happens based on velocity and distance traveled?
Do not know. In fact, you are the first person, I hate to say this, but you were the first person in 7 years to bring up space-time in regards to flat Earth. Don't know. Don't know.
Sure.
It's never even been proposed to me yet.
Yeah, it's true, though.
Do I believe in space-time? Sure. Sure, why not? But I'm a big time travel guy, so all aspects of time are fascinating.
Yeah.
It just seems that there's something that's not non-static going on with our existence with time and having to do with distance, which is like kind of a flat Earth theory and or just globe theory in general. Or it's just that has to do with distance. It has to do with dimension and distance, right? And there seems to be some kind of difference between like things in motion and things not in motion. We perceive time differently. I was wondering how that fits.
I do not know. All I can tell you is one of my favorite things when I'm bored is to think about how time is almost infinitely fractionable. And when it comes to relativity and space-time, I love it. But do I think it necessarily has to apply to an infinite universe? I take it back to the studio apartment whenever I get a chance.
Well, I just want to say one thing really quick, and this really doesn't have anything to do as much with what – it has to do with what we're talking about, but yet it doesn't. You had brought up briefly about the Matrix.
Sure.
Now, and this doesn't mean that I agree or disagree in either way, but I will say this. The Foots talked to me about the Matrix back in what year was it? 12 or 13, and they claim there is a Matrix. Now, they also claim there's space, but they do claim there is a Matrix.
Sure. Sure. One of the reasons I don't bring up when I've been doing this stuff, I say flat Earth, flat Earth, flat Earth, is because most people, you guys are all brilliant, I'm sure, but most people can't get their whole head around the entire thing about, the whole Matrix thing. Think about this. The Matrix has been out now for 22 years and 23 years. And
I've never seen the movie.
it's still, I don't think it compares necessarily to its rival, which was The 13th Floor, which is a simulation inside a simulation theory, which goes all the way back to a book called Simulcron 3, but that's a whole other thing. But most people can't get that. So I have to start out, I'm a big believer in preaching the lowest common denominator narrative I can, which is it could be, it's probably flat, but if it's flat and it's closed, it's probably virtual. Why wouldn't it be? What we're striving to do, art imitates life. And we are racing towards that, which I think is hilarious because it was one of the things that, certain philosophers have said. It's like, you realize that if we actually get to the point where we can make our own simulation, it'll be the last thing we ever make because no one will want to do anything else. It'll be the ultimate escapism. It's the running joke from Star Trek. The holodeck, why is the holodeck always empty? The holodeck would be jammed all the time with people. There'd be lines for that stupid thing.
I love that this is where the conversation went because it went so much deeper than I feel like you were expecting. And Mark, you said a little bit about if you told most people about you thinking it was a simulation, they'd lose their minds even more than they do when you tell them about flat Earth.
It shouldn't be that way either. That's part that bugs me is I really wish I could go into more stuff like that. I mean, I love the neuroscience versus free will predestination argument, but again, the general public, especially in America, I can't speak for anyone else that might be listening that's not from the United States. The United States, our education system is very basic. We barely get people. It's like, we're lucky if they can drive. They know nothing about chemistry or biochemistry or engineering or physics or any of that stuff when they get out of school. They forget most, even general algebra. So it's
and
nice
then
to
there's
know
a problem because then they're highly educated and they've got master's degrees and PhDs and then that puts it out of the realm of what you're talking about. So unfortunately, the whole educational system is designed to tell people that there is space and we're not under a dome. So it's an uphill battle for you. I feel bad.
Well, here's the one thing.
I would feel too bad.
Here's the one thing.
I don't feel that bad.
Go ahead.
Which is we can have evidence-based as far as drawing conclusions with, right? And there's a lot of evidence as far as traveling around the world goes by boat or by plane. And I brought up the one thing about circumnavigating the southern hemisphere versus the north and how they coincide. It's both 45 hours to do so. But there's also ships that have gone for 200 years around the Antarctic, and roughly it takes like a few weeks to like a month. I don't know the exact time, but it's not a long time, compared to traveling around the oceans as far as going from, England to like Hong Kong or something like that, right? If you're saying that the Antarctic is on the greatest outer edge compared to everything else, that means that if you were to boat around the Antarctic, you're boating literally around the whole world. That would seem like that would take years in by a boat, but it only takes like a few weeks to a month or a few months.
Really?
2 months,
yeah,
I think.
After this is over, I'd love you to email me who's done it exactly. And while you're at it, let's make it even easier. Forget about the boat thing. And by the way, what we're talking about here, let's do the whole Magellan thing. If you take a dinner plate and you move your finger around the dinner plate, does that make the dinner plate, because you come back to the same point, does that make the dinner plate a sphere? No. But forget about that, because that's boats, right? Let's do something easy. How about planes? Planes go, you know, supposedly go around the equator all day long. But show me a plane route that goes north to south, goes pole to pole. Find me that ever in air travel, ever. In fact, Antarctica flights have been forbidden for decades. You can't fly over Antarctica anymore for decades.
Well, I know people have flown from Vancouver to like Australia or New Zealand, which means that they're essentially traveling the radius of this like disc, right? But that takes a year, or not a year, that takes a day to travel essentially,
sure.
16 hours. So that means that's a 16-hour flight just for the radius, let alone the whole circumference. That would take,
yeah.
It would literally take like 5 to 10 days to, based on that theory in my mind, like just from looking at it from a dimensional standpoint, to travel that circumference.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I know your brain's melting. I hear it. Unfortunately, we're not going to have time to go over too much, but watch some of the videos we've done. We have got 7 years of content out there. Trust me when I say this, we have covered the plane routes and the boat routes in huge, painstaking detail.
Okay. Well, thanks for answering my questions. That is really interesting. I'm just generally interested.
Arthur, 2019, an unmanned Salodrome 1020 completed a 13,670-mile journey around Antarctica in search of carbon dioxide. It was
right.
The world's first autonomous circumnavigation in Antarctica. Now, it did take that 196 days to do.
Who ran that drone?
I'm sure it was a government. I'm sure
exactly.
It was a government. And
it absolutely is the government.
The problem.
They're the only people that are allowed down there. The Antarctic Treaty has said since 1959, said that no private corporation, no matter how powerful they are, can set up shop down in Antarctica. The only people that are down there are military and military scientists. And by the way, the treaty's not even up for review until 2040, 2041, I think. When is that possible? I've never, you know, treaties are meant to be broken. The United States has broken tons of treaties. In fact, all the treaties have been broken.
Maybe in 2040, the truth will finally come out. It will be time to let the world know about the truth that you have. And then, it'll be cataclysmic.
I know there's a little bit of mocking tone there, but think about this. In 1960, because again, I agree with what the government did, which was in 1960, would you have told the public? No, they were not ready. Absolutely not ready in 1960. I wouldn't have done it myself. Now
I wouldn't. I would have told them. I think it would have been a lot of fun to break that news to the world.
I think you would have.
And I think everything would have just, I mean, you know, we were worried about Y2K. It worked out. People got over it. We're worried now about making daylight savings time constant. And there's been some repercussions, but I think the world will get over it.
I really do.
I could be wrong. It could be a computer bug
that shoots cash into the streets is a lot different than telling people they live in a box. We've been living in the box forever.
So if we're living in a box, we're living in a box. It's worked out for thousands of years.
Look, you're intelligent and you're open-minded and you get this now in 2022. Absolutely fine. In 1960, no way could you tell the people. No way. They weren't. There was no reference point for them to do it. I mean, heck, even telling people aliens were around back in, you know, almost 1950 was completely off the table. Could you tell people there's aliens now? Yes, absolutely. There's been a movie reference or a television reference to every age group. You could pull that off now, which is why I'd love for a big ship to show up somewhere.
Anything that's different that is not what we've been taught to believe, people balk at. It's like telepathy. We talked about this at John's conference. People cannot wrap their head around the fact that we can speak telepathically.
Sure.
I've done it since I was a toddler. I know literally hundreds of people that can do it. John can do it. And all the cryptids, the ETs and everything, that's how their main form of communication. But people can't accept it because it's not what their norm is. And when you try to get people to think outside of that little tiny box that's what is considered normal, their mind just automatically shuts it down because it's not what they've been taught their whole life.
Sure.
And it's an upward fight getting anybody to listen.
And
it
and
doesn't matter if it's real or not.
I agree with you. There's an old saying that conformity builds empires, and you need a lot of people that think along the same lines and go with a very easy narrative to get what you need done. And the open-minded people, the creative people outside of that, it's always a struggle. But yeah, I absolutely hear you.
So for everyone on here and everyone that's listening to this, I have a question. So do you think if any secrets whatsoever about our topic that we've been talking about is leaked, do you think that the Flat Earth 2.0 and the Globe Believers, we'll call everyone, will ever come together to find out this bigger picture?
Oh, if it was revealed, if the UN all of a sudden decided, it's like, oh, yay, by the way, you'd never get a human group to release it. You'd have to have a spaceship show up and do that, or at least pretend. You'd have to fake a spaceship to make that sort of announcement. Because if any other country decided to say, any scientist, like say a scientist in Germany said, it's flat. I'm not going to do German accent. I think it's flat. People would be like, they're nuts. And they'd just say that, try to discredit the university. But at that point, it wouldn't matter if the Globe people and the Flat Earth people were, got along, because we would. And the whole thing would, there'd be a big, because at that point, everyone would be looking at our arguments would seem small by comparison. No one would even probably care about me. I'd be like, see, I told you. And people like, yeah, whatever. I want to go see the dome. So.
Okay.
Anyway, anything else I can?
Can I revisit the Coriolis effect, which is like on Earth, like we have weather systems like hurricanes or tropical storms, which has this effect, which is like the northern hemisphere, it spins one way, and the southern hemisphere
spins the other way.
Hurricanes
versus typhoons. I'm going to cut you off. All right. So there's a giant YouTube channel out there called Smarter Every Day. I'm sure some of you have heard it. Hopefully they have. These people are not flat earthers in any way, shape, or form. And there was an old argument, which is the spinning of the water down the drains clockwise versus counterclockwise? It is a myth, or is it real? And they decided to take a guy in Australia and a guy up in North America and set up absolutely identical big wading pools with a center drain and made sure the water was sitting perfectly calm for hours and hours on end. And to make sure they didn't disturb the water, they used little drops of food coloring to make sure. And then they popped the drain simultaneously while both of them were talking on the phone, and they had both video connections, and the drains didn't do really anything. There wasn't any big clockwise versus counterclockwise change. And they did it multiple times to where at the end they said, whatever effect you're talking about is nominal, and it seems to be whatever's happening there is a tourist trap. Now, does that mean that the typhoons, spin one way and the hurricanes spin another way? Yeah, possibly. Don't know why that's happening. But do I think it has to do with the global nature of the Earth? No, I don't. Does that help?
Sure. That's. I think that's a reasonable assumption.
But seriously, look up that giant channel if you get a chance. It is absolutely amazing to watch. And honestly, I didn't know either, because I always heard the same things. Oh, toilets go this way. And look, you can go up in your sink in your kitchen right now. Depending on where you put the tap, the water will drain one way. If you move it over the other side, it'll drain the other way.
Yeah, but, right on the equator, it doesn't spin anyway. It just goes right down. This is a repeatable.
If you're going to the sites, remember it is a big tourist thing to do that. I have watched the all sorts of videos on there, and if you're going to that place and they say, oh look, here it is, drains go straight down. Now to that point, however, to your point, because I'm surprised you haven't brought this up, the whole Star Trails thing, which goes into the simulation, because do the star trails spin one way and spin the other way depending on where you are? I do believe so. Yes, you're absolutely right. But that goes into a whole other thing, which is in simulations, we build something using something called instancing, which is, sorry, real quick, and I don't know how much time we have, which is if you're standing way, way, way far away from me, you're looking at the belt of okay, perfect. You're looking at the belt of Orion, and you're calling me on the phone, and I'm way, way, I'm thousands of miles away from you. And I say, hey, I'm looking at the belt of Orion, too. And you say, well, the middle star is blue. And I say, the middle star is red. Which one of us is right? Well, we both could be right, because we could be looking at completely different versions of the belt of Orion, which is what we do in simulations. When we look up at the sky, we base whatever you're seeing up, it's regional and sometimes even individual. So do I think the star trails are spinning one way and the other way, depending on where you are? You bet I do. I've seen the time-lapse photography. Yeah. Sorry, I ramble. I get kind of excited. What else is out there?
No,
go ahead, Trey, please.
Well, you know, it's always interesting to look at different perspectives, and I'm not saying any one person's right or wrong, but sometimes it's not like an even split. Sometimes someone is right and someone is wrong. It'll just be interesting to see if more science research for more hundreds of years actually proves out this perspective. I can't wait.
And by the way,
I probably won't be here.
Thank you, by the way, for being polite about that. If you were one of the big science troll channels, you would have been giving me an earful and calling me every name in the book. So thank you for being considerate.
No, it's no problem. When you said earlier in the show that during the pandemic, did that cause a problem for you, or did your group have an opinion on pandemic issues?
Oh, are we allowed to talk about that here?
Sure. Sure we are.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, don't forget, when it comes to the, our community, well, yeah, we're big. I mean, I don't want to get into this too much because I don't want to, flag anybody that might be putting this video anywhere else. But nobody in our community took the shot. Nobody.
Oh, that's okay.
So, I mean, just because it kind of goes along, it's like, look, when it comes to the government, or not even just the government, just people in power. Power corrupts, and people lie about all sorts of stuff. When it comes, I'll give you a quick overview, which is the general public has a comfort zone. Everybody knows there's all sorts of deception. There's deception in business and politics and sports and entertainment and, yeah, even journalism and science. It happens, right? People do bend the rules and break the rules for usually personal gain. So when it comes to something like, the whole pandemic thing, we go into it thinking there's something fishy going on because the narrative was everywhere simultaneously. And so after that, it's like, okay, then we start looking for what the ulterior motives could be and go on from there. But no,
in your community, did anyone contract a viral illness?
Not that I know of. Nobody. Oh, okay. Let's put it this way: nobody ran into. I mean, I never. 2 years. We probably shouldn't get into in this show. I mean, there's too much.
No,
to go
it's okay.
Post.
It's all right. I was just.
But we were good to begin with. The only people that had a problem were the people that, and I warned people at the end, I go, if you have some sort of respiratory issue, and I'm not trying to say that I'm anti-hospital, but at the moment, if you went into the hospital with some sort of respiratory issue, their protocol, if you tested positive, was, okay, we're just going to put you on a ventilator and pump you full of remdesivir. That's the only thing that was on the protocol. There were no alternatives. And that was potentially very damaging. One of the side effects of a ventilator, the number one side effect is pneumonia. And so if you go in with something that could be pneumonia, I don't think that's a good idea at all. But I don't want to get into much. I don't want to end this thing on a down note. But
No. I always find it interesting because, as far as vaccinations go, smallpox inoculation, it's 300 years old, and there were people who who denied the efficacy, but when they saw the final results, they changed their mind. And that's what it's all about in science for me, is that I want to see results. I want to see experiments. I want to see numbers. And then I want to
sure.
see data. And then I can make an educated guess. But the controversies around vaccines have been going on for 300 years. Franklin's brother wrote a series of articles. But I tell you, it appears he based it on just creating controversy because it sold more newspapers. That's the same kind of thing. And as far as not knowing anyone who didn't get COVID and die, I signed death certificates for people that died from COVID. So it actually is real, and it actually is potentially lethal. But whether someone chooses to be vaccinated or not is entirely up to them. I'm not going to force anybody to do it because it just depends on their belief system. So
okay,
I think
okay.
what you're doing is perfectly fine.
Okay. Okay, look, fine. You know what? I won't reproduce this thing on there, or maybe I'll cut off this part, which is when it came to the vax, I was very, very skeptical. You sounded like my father there for a second. And my father took the shot, and 9 days later, he was dead. My uncle took the shot, and within 2 weeks, he was on more blood thinner than actual blood. An ex-girlfriend of mine took the shot, and she couldn't meet me for coffee because she got jaundice, and I asked why, and it's because her liver was failing. And I could give you probably 20 more examples after that.
But you don't know anyone
when
that
it
got
comes
COVID.
To, shut it for a second. When it comes to vaccinations, I'm old enough to be it's like, okay, 6 vaccinations when I was growing up, that's fine. You don't need 40. And you know why there's 40? Is because when Big Pharma got involved, they realized how much money it was to put something in the vaccination program.
Yeah.
And that's
I'm
and
with
that's
you,
what,
with
so,
you there,
and,
man.
And when and look, the MMR, you can say anything you want about Benjamin Franklin, but when the MMR came out, and then all of a sudden our autism rate went from 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 37, and then you got Sanjay Gupta on television going, shrugging his shoulders, I don't know what it could be, but you can't blame pharmaceuticals. I go, look, it can only be one of three things other than that. It can be air, it can be water, it can be food, and all those things are regional. And then you've got kids that are taking the MMR battery, and all of a sudden they have seizures, and they wake up the next day, and they are checked out. No. Vaccination.
There's something super sketchy about vaccines, especially about the recent one, how they rolled it out and tried to make it mandatory through coercion. I don't know what it's like in the States where you guys are, but there's something very unethical about that. And coming from companies that have a history of recalling products, like you watch the commercials, if you took this drug, you might be eligible for all this money and things, you know what I mean? And somehow now we can't even question it, or we're being labeled, you know what I mean? I had friends who are in the same boat who've taken it and had very weird reactions as well to it, including healthy people, healthy guys, friends, and their girlfriends who had to take it because she's a nursing student and she ended up with serious heart problems from it. I could
spend a day on the people. Hell, the number one female tennis player in the world just retired at age 25. The number two female golfer in the world at 23, she's not going to be able to golf again. There's all sorts of people that are just dropping like flies with myocarditis and pericarditis and all the other fun stuff. So is COVID real? Yeah, maybe. But you know what? The vax seems a lot worse. A lot worse.
So
anyway,
I think we've only got 2 minutes left to airtime. And I'm just going to kind of interject here. Number one, I enjoyed the conversation immensely. I am really open to all different kinds of things. And so I found it really informative to hear your perspective on it. And I thank you for that. I was not excited to hear anybody say to Trey, shut it. That I found offensive. Other than that, I enjoy having you on the show. I love the information that you gave us on it because it really gives me something to think about with it, kind of opens my mind and stretches it a little bit to kind of think even more outside of the box because I don't ever think inside of the box anyway. So I really appreciate that you did that. I know it's going to shut off here in about a minute. That's why I wanted to interject. And I hope you come back on again because I'd like to hear more about the Flat Earth series. You know, I really had not investigated that a lot. And so I like to, when I'm coming on the show with new people, I don't do any background checking on any of it because I like to hear their perspective fresh and not something that I read or possibly misconstrued. So I do thank you for that.
Yeah, no, happy to do it.
Thanks, Robin. And I'll say that we've had a lively discussion, and we're glad everyone made it to the end. Dr. Trey Dunaway, Robin McCray, Mark Johnston, and Kyler Smith, great co-hosts tonight. And Mark Sargent, thank you for being here. We'll be back next week on the one and only ScaryCast. We'll be back tomorrow night. Robin has a guest. And so Mark Johnston and I will be interviewing with you, and it'll be a lot of fun. So thanks a lot. Have a good one, and we'll see you next time on ScaryCast.
Everybody have a good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good night, guys.